Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
We always talk about how we want to look, but we don't really talk about how we want to feel. If you didn't know how tall I was and you just heard a woman who was 238 pounds, you're like, oh, she's fat as shit. But that's what we tend to do is like we hear a number and we just like, you know, shrivel up at it like, oh, my gosh, it's a lot of weight. But you don't understand. Everybody carries weight differently. I would engage in things without any feeling because it didn't mean anything to me. And I probably did that as a defense mechanism so that I couldn't get my feelings hurt. I learned that I could present myself in a way that is comfortable to me versus trying to meet up to the expectations of other people who I'll probably never ever see again.
This is The Secret Lives of Black Women. I'm Lauren.
I'm Sharla. And today we're talking bodies.
You know what? I'm really excited about today's conversation because I feel like I got a lot of thoughts, especially like I feel like as a young girl, people just felt the need to just comment on like my body that definitely informed the way that I looked at myself. So like, can you think of like I can think for myself of being like in fourth grade and my dad was really sick. So that summer, my grandma just gave me like baked potatoes every day as like talk about eating your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back to school and like my dad was dying of cancer and I remember a teacher telling me, oh my god, you've gained so much weight over the summer.
Nice.
And I was just like, it was the first time that I felt like I was super conscious of like, oh, I exist now in a fat body and that's not good.
Yeah.
And only as an adult can I take on like the layers of the other, like how fucked up that is, because you're like, maybe you just are sensitive to a kid who has a dying parent.
Yeah.
Instead of commenting on, like, their body. But that's an easier thing to be like, you can fix this.
Did they know that your parent was sick? Oof. Yeah.
But I think it was just, like, a gut reaction of being like, you weren't this big and now you are. And I'm not going to think about what you're going through. Do you have a moment like that?
I do. I mean, not just like that. Not as jarring like that. mine wasn't as jarring because it wasn't it was a family member. So it feels like a little bit more insidious. Like it feels a little bit more like love / I'm trying to help you instead of that kind of like pick on you feeling. It was like, I don't know how like black people in New Orleans are, but like Haitians, the women in the family are always very vigilant, like hyper vigilant of your body if you're a young girl. And first
it's everyone.
It's like, you need to eat. Like immigrants, like Haitians love to make you fat. They want you fat. If they don't feel like you have roles on you, like as a kid, then they don't feel like they're doing their job as a parent. And then as soon as you become, I would say like 8 to 10, where you're about to have your period, it's super weird because I feel like it's almost this awareness that you are starting to be attractive to men, which is really gross and weird. And then they start, like, it's around 8 years old. They start to tell you, you can't be too fat. Like, watch what you're eating. Even though your entire, like, kid life, they're shoving you full of food and telling you need to eat.
It's so fucked up. I mean, I remember, like, growing up and people being like, you know, being a teenager and being told by family members, you would be so pretty.
Yes, yes.
If you, like, lost weight. So there's always that, like, button push of, like, Anne. And I think that, like, as a teenager, my rebellion was, like, I'm just going to get as fat as possible. Like,
ooh,
fuck you.
Interesting.
Like, I'm just going to, like, eat. This is, like, a separate, this is a way to, like, control my body and control my life, but, like, in a in a negative way. And it's so much to discuss.
And for me, I also feel like it wasn't just weight. Like, it was never ever just weight, because my mother is more fair skinned than me. It was always colorism attached to it. It was always like, you can't be fat, but you also can't be too dark. Like, don't eat too much, and also don't stay in the sun too much, and also use this cream. And it was just, but I stopped using those creams like very early on, because I was just like, come on.
Like, they fuck us up so much.
But even young, I was like, come on, this is ridiculous, guy. Like, can I just be myself?
Can you just encourage me and make me happy?
Can you just make me feel like what I am as I am is enough and
is
okay?
It's enough.
And we've, okay.
I'm really excited to delve deep into this conversation. I'm really excited about our guest.
Our guest today is Chloe Hilliard. Chloe's a comedian. She's a writer and producer. For over 10 years, she was a culture and entertainment journalist writing for The Village Voice, Essence, Vibe, King, and The Source. She's been on shows like Last Comic Standing, Comedy Central's The Nightly Show, and MTV's Acting Out. Super talented. And she recently wrote a book called Fuck Your Diet, which pokes a little fun at the quest for better health, permanent weight loss, and a sense of self-worth. Also, Chloe has co-hosted Black History with me and the show Velvet, so I feel like she's my peep. And I'm dying to talk to her about this
I'm dying to talk to her about this stuff. I'm dying to talk to her not only about her book, but just her journey to like loving her body.
Yeah,
because I think like loving yourself is like one thing, it's a whole sphere, but loving your body, like, yes, and feeling good in your skin, let's get into it. Let's talk to Chloe.
Let's do it.
Fuck Your Diet is such a, it's not just leaning into like the body positivity of like, I love every part of myself. It's just like, fuck the systems.
Yeah.
In my
head, it's a declaration.
It's a declaration against like the systems that made you think that to begin with. So I just am curious of like, A, how did you decide that this is the book that you need to write right now? And how did you come up with the title?
So I actually was featured in a local magazine out here in Brooklyn, and it was like the 50th Funny People in Brooklyn, and I was in it. And then from that, a book agent just contacted me. He was like, hey, I saw you in this magazine. Do you have a book idea? And so the reason why he contacted me is because I'm born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, but I grew up in a Hasidic Jewish neighborhood, and that was like part of my paragraph in the article, which is saying like how that influenced my point of view and being like a misfit and an outcast from like day one. Like, my family was a handful of non-Hasidic Jewish families that lived in our apartment complex. And then from there, I was like unofficially bused to schools. Like, I didn't get on a yellow bus because New York is cheap and we don't have yellow school buses. But I had to take like two buses to get to a good school out of my neighborhood. And then I was an outcast there because I was considered like the Jewish girl, because my mother dressed me like a Jewish kid and I didn't know anything about hip hop. I didn't know anything about R&B. It was a setup.
Right.
And so then from there, I was just always the biggest kid, the youngest kid, because my birthday is at the end of the year. And this is before they did the cutoff where you had to, if you're born after September, now they make you wait to the next year. So I started school at 4, and my birthday is December 28th. So I was the youngest and the biggest. So it was like I had a lot of things stacked against me. And so that was all kind of represented in the article. And he was like, you seem like you have a book. And so I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I've always wanted to write a book. I was a journalist before I was a comedian. So that's like something you always want to like check off on your list as like a form of accomplishment. But it was really hard, because once I met with him and I sat down, I was like, well, what am I actually going to write about? What am I actually going to write about that is relatable to other people? That's not just my super like, you know, small point of view and perspective. And I think the overarching thing that I've always dealt with throughout my whole life was actually dealing with my physical body and trying to fit in, or, you know, not stand out, or, you know, be like everybody else. But it's really hard to be socially accepted when you're physically different than everyone else. And then when it came to the title, when we were sitting down and discussing, just like, you know, kicking around ideas, my agent, Robert, told me, he was like, well, the biggest selling books are diet books.
No way.
And I was
like,
oh.
For some reason, I'm very surprised.
I'm not.
Really?
Really?
No, why are you surprised?
I don't, for biggest selling?
Yeah.
I thought the biggest selling books would probably be like self-help books that weren't necessarily diet books.
People think that diet books are self-help because it's like, if I lose weight, I change my life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that I know that because I like...
Right. Have you bought diet books?
I don't think that I've ever bought a diet book, but I like have a I have a fat body, you know? So it's just like it's ingrained in you. People are like, have you read this? Or you see if you go to I don't know. I feel like I'm more much more conscious of it. So they were like,
yeah, but also for every diet is a new book. So if you're doing keto, you're going to read keto literature. If you're going to, if you're doing Atkins, you're going to read. So it's like you may not even perceive it as like I bought a diet book, but it's just like, oh, this new way of thinking about food, which is really just a diet book.
So the your agent told you the biggest selling books are diet books and you were just like, I have a diet book in me.
No, I was like, how about we did a book called Fuck Your Diet. And then he was like, that sounds great. And so I had the title before I had the actual concept of the book. And then I had to figure out what that meant to me. What does Fuck Your Diet mean to me?
And what does it mean?
It means allowing yourself to not take the brunt of the shame or embarrassment or the responsibility. And I know it sounds weird saying responsibility, but when it comes to your body, there's so many other factors that play a role in how you eat and how you think about food and how your body reacts to food that it's so easy and typical to just tell a fat person, oh, just do X, Y, and Z and you'll lose weight. And it's like, no, I've done all those things. Mm-hmm. And I know it's gone. I'm also a little interested to see how people react to me because if you look at me, I'm not a larger woman, but I'm still a large woman. I'm 6'1", 238 pounds. I just carry it differently because I'm a taller person and I have been bigger than this. The biggest I've been probably like close to 300 pounds. So I know people looking at me like, well, you're not fat. And it's like, well, you may perceive me as not being fat, but I know all that I've gone through in my life and also how I view myself. Yeah. You may not see me the way I view myself. And then also based upon where you live and what you have access to, that shapes your body's relationship with food. Growing up in school in New York City, every day my mother gave me money and I would go to the corner store and get candy and chips every day. And then what we don't realize is that sugar intake, and no, by no stretch of imagination am I a medical expert. I've just read a lot and done a lot of research, and you can do the same research for yourself. But it's very easy to find the correlation between bad habits and how your mind rewires itself towards food. So sugar is an addiction. I think we can all agree to that. But when you're eating those high levels of sugar as a kid, it just it teaches your body to crave different things versus other foods. It's so hard as, you know, nearly a 40-year-old woman to be like, well, if I just cut this out, and it's just like there's a lot more to the story than just depriving yourself of things that you think are not good for you.
And a lot of it is, to me, a lot of it is also like psychological. Mm-hmm. You know, so like telling someone just to like cut something out doesn't change the relationship that they have with food, and whether it's like I'm processing emotions through food, right, or whether that's like overeating or undereating. I feel like, you know,
mm-hmm. I had this moment last year where I was going to the gym. I was going to Equinox because I'm fancy now. Mm. And it's like the worst place to go if you're just really getting into the gym, because number one, it's in Hollywood. So people are, and Hollywood is not the kind of place that I thought it was going to be. People are much nicer than I ever thought. And like health and wellness are much more a part of the culture. And it's not just about how you look. It's also about how you feel, which I really appreciated learning that when I got here.
Yeah.
But Equinox is like out of that. It's outside of that realm. Like it truly is like the worst of the vibe. Yeah. You know what? Let me stop saying Equinox. Anyway, point of the matter is that one was super superficial. And I would go in there every single day and look in the mirror and be like, whoa, I hate how I look. You look so gross. Like, you need to do this. And I had to come to a point where I was just like, this is really not helpful. This is not helping me.
Not only that, a large amount of those people probably have procedures done. Like, that's the other thing.
And they're probably
like everybody's getting cool sculpt in and injections and infusions. And it's just like,
and this was the kind of gym where people came with makeup on. So I was just like, that number one tells you a lot. Like, that, it tells you a lot. But I had to get to the point where I was like, okay, this is counterproductive. I'm coming to the gym with this. It's not motivating the way that I'm doing this. And I'm not doing it in a way that feels healthy in any way at all. And I had to come to a point where I was just like, why am I doing this? I realized I had to change my perception of myself. Like, I can't go in there and be like, I hate my body. This is gross. I'm punishing my body. I have to go in there and be like, I really love myself. I want to take care of myself. I want to feel good.
Yeah.
I want to feel better. And it changed everything. And like, it really did.
And that's a journey. I have a question, which is, When was the first moment that you cognitively were like, fuck, the relationship that I have with my body is affecting, because you mentioned earlier it was affecting like the way that you were in the workplace or mm-hmm. in your relationships or mm-hmm. your interactions with other people. And when was the, was there a moment, or can you talk about like an experience where you were like, this is impacting the way that I interact in the world?
Yeah, it was very early on for me. It was in elementary school for sure. Like, you know, the opening line of the book is like, I had a perfect body once I was five. And after five, I pretty much started gaining weight. And it was an emotional thing, too. I mean, I mentioned it in the book, but my father went away. He was incarcerated. And so that made me gain a lot of weight. I was doing a lot of emotional eating. And so that manifested in my performance in school, just being lethargic and, you know, just not having energy because I was just eating a lot more sugar. And I also wasn't going out as well. Like, my mother wasn't forcing me. It's like, it's hard when you... not lose a parent, but when a parent leaves you, there's a vacancy there. And so my mother wasn't going to double down and be like, go outside and play. Like, mm-hmm. she was like, oh, you just want to stay in the house? Okay, just stay in the house and yeah. watch TV. Like, it wasn't. So that was, you know, that also kind of like that was the introduction of my weight gain. It was from an emotional standpoint. And then after that, it became a comfort thing, you know, because then me and my mom would be in the house and we would like eat ice cream together. And mind you, my mother was slim. My mother was like a size 2-4. So she's like, I'm looking at her. It's like, I want to look like her. And then also I had growth spurts. So I was very, very tall. I'm 6'1". I've been this tight since I was 12. And kids were very mean. I mean, kids are always mean, but they let me know off top that I was not like them. I didn't look like them. I was ugly. Like, I was told that repeatedly. And it was interesting because the kids that I went to school with, I was with the same group of kids from kindergarten to fifth grade. So I just heard the same stuff every single year. Then I went to like this other school on the other side of Brooklyn, which is like all West Indian Caribbean and like Hispanic American like students. And so the West Indian people are like, no, you good, girl. What you talking about? Why are you tripping? You look fine. And so that just like an awakening where it's just like, okay, I'm fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me. And they were like, no, we like big, strong women in our culture, and you look fine. And that
See,
was like,
this is
that
why
was
I think
the epiphany.
You're Haitian.
Yeah.
It's
I was
true.
Definitely embraced.
It's true.
I definitely came home from junior high school with, once I had my West Indian sisters with accents trying to speak Patois, my mother was like, you have to stop.
So what is your relationship with your body like now?
I have my moments. I'm definitely not in the mindset of like, I want to lose 30 pounds. It's like no, more now, it's just like toning areas. But I also will continue to always work out because just health wise, I've seen so many things happen to members of my family with age. I don't want to be on high blood pressure pills. I don't want to have diabetes. I don't want to have all of these, you know, cocktails I got to take every single day just to get through the day. So for that reason, pretty much that reason alone, I will always continue to work out. I do hot yoga. I have a personal trainer I see 2 to 3 times a week. I try to incorporate like, you know, 20, 30 minutes of cardio. I do goofy stuff. Like I have a hula hoop that it like really helps.
I have a hula hoop. I love it.
Love it, right?
Love
it's great.
It.
You actually like break a sweat.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's compact. I can break it down. I can take it with me when I travel. So when I'm
what?
On the road,
you got
I can
a
take
breakable.
Yes.
Breakdownable.
Yeah.
Hula.
A weighted breakable.
Cool. It's pretty great.
I cannot hula hoop to this day.
Let me tell you something.
Is a talent.
Listen, no, it's not a talent. Let me tell you something. I was never able to hula hoop until like 2 years ago when I bought this hula hoop because I was always too big for the hula hoop. But I found a hula hoop that was big enough because you realize it's not necessarily about your width. It's about like your height.
Your height. Mm.
And so I never knew that. So I would just go to parties and want a hula hoop and it never fit me. And I'm thinking it's because I was too fat. And it was like, no, I just needed a bigger size hula hoop because of my height. But I think when it comes to my body the way it is right now, I like my size. I'm very pleased with myself. Of course, I would like, you know, to be a little slimmer in my abdomen. And I'm going to, you know, work out and do as much as I can. If not, I'll probably get liposuction.
We've talked about plastic surgery before.
Yeah.
I remember we talked about it at a Black History show because I said I wanted to get new titties.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always wanted new titties. And I'm scared. I have a joke on my album about being too scared to die on the table for titties because I don't know if it's worth it. I'm just like,
I know.
I mean, I'm totally, I'm like, if there are things that you want to do that's going to make you feel good about yourself and your skin, like, go for it, you know?
Yeah.
But this also brings, I'm just thinking of you, like, talking about like your physical health and like exercise. And I think that that's another false perception that a lot of people with bigger bodies, people are like, well, you're not healthy. And you're like, mm-hmm. yeah, you can be in the gym every day. And like your body may just be built
right.
a certain yeah. way that you're like not supposed to be that then.
That was something I read an article about that, which is like there was a study that showed all the people who did like the Biggest Loser and how they have that dramatic weight loss. And then as soon as they go home, they start gaining weight again. And it's because your body is programmed to want to be a certain weight, a certain size for its own protective reasons that we don't know. It's like your body doesn't communicate these things to you. But I always notice like whenever I lose a lot of weight and I'm like, oh, I'm really going to kill it. I'm making this goal. Like I slowly start creeping up and I always end up in the same weight range. And that's like your body's comfort zone. And it takes a lot to break, to reprogram your body to get out of that comfort zone. And you have to do something really drastic, like change your diet and like keep it that way, like go raw vegan or whatever it is that you can't like slowly gain that weight back. But your body is kind of set. And you got to think about it. It's like your body's been doing this thing now on its own without telling you what it's doing for like 30 plus years. So who are you to change it in a 21 day cleanse?
Right. I do hate all of those overnight quick fix kind of diets, even the ones that claim over like I see stuff on YouTube is like lose 40 pounds in like 6 days or some garbage thing. Yeah. And I'm just like, this is horribly dangerous. And it's so much about behavior. Like so much of it is about behavior that needs a long time to change.
And I think also I realized in writing this book that I definitely had a lot of emotional baggage that I was carrying that I kind of repressed, that I didn't even notice that I was repressing.
Ooh, spill the tea.
Then, it was just a lot of the stuff that I experienced being bullied as a kid. You know, like I just put on a mask of being like, well, it doesn't matter. I don't care. And that was like a thing that I used to say all the time in elementary school. It was like, I don't care. They were like, Chloe, you stink. Your mom this, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't care. So that was just my defense mechanism to be like, I don't care. And while that may be true to a certain degree, there are certain things that when I think about them, I'm like, oh, wow, that really did affect me at that time. And that kind of had like a ripple effect on how I engage with people in certain circumstances that I really need to address, because, you know, it's not one thing to look at why things are the way they are right now, but you have to kind of go back to like the genesis of what caused that thing. And so I'm going to therapy and I want to do that because I've been wanting to do it for a long time. But I also know that there is emotional connection to how your body reacts to certain things. And so, you know, there are certain studies that show that a lot of times if people have gone through traumatic experiences, they carry a lot of belly weight because that is how you protect yourself. And so it doesn't matter how much you work out and all this other stuff, but your body's still in like emotional protective mode. So like all these other things that I learned and realized that I'm like, okay, I need to really exhaust all of the options and really get down to the root of like what all of my like emotional baggage is and then how that influences my physical baggage.
I want to delve a bit deeper in that, and you're uncovering things through writing this book. But first, we need to take a really quick break. And then we're going to come right back and just continue to dive deep.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll be inviting everyone over. From barbecues to girls' night, the kids can even host their friends.
Whoa, it smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy, the way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
We are back with Chloe Hiller talking about her life and her new book, Fuck Your Diet. What was it like for you to uncover these stories and really confront aspects of your life and how that played into the way that you saw yourself and your body through writing this, and how did you cope with all of those things coming up?
Well, it was never my intention when I first had that meeting with my book agent to write a deep dive book. I, in my mind, was like, I'm a funny woman. I'm a comedian. I'm a former journalist. I can write funny stuff. I can write funny essays about food and diet and sex and dating. And then when I really sat down to write my proposal, which is a very in-depth process. If you're ever trying to write a book, it's very in-depth because you have to live with this book. And I knew I didn't want it to just be surface. And I also didn't want, when I initially thought of it, the concept, I didn't want it to be just a voyeuristic look at my life. Like, hey, I just cut myself open and look at all my mistakes and my follies and all the weird niggas I fucked. Like, I don't know if I can curse on the show, but...
Why weird, though?
Definitely weird. And so I really wanted it to be something that people could take away information. So if my experience and my trauma could allow people to reflect on their own personal experiences mixed in with facts and figures to kind of help. I feel like the facts and figures in the book helped me come to terms with the things that I experienced, more so being like, why me? And it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, you could say why me, but this is kind of probably why you, because of X, Y, and Z that happened at that same time that you had no control over.
I'm so deeply relating to everything that you're saying in this talk. Including the thought of, you just said, Charlie was just like, why weird niggas? Do you feel like, how has all of this, like, played into your, like, romantic life or dating life, or has it?
Yeah, because of my disassociation from my physical body and my sexuality, I've been able to date like a dude, meaning I haven't had a lot of emotional connections to the men that I've dated or been sexually intimate with, because I, a long time ago, detached my emotional body from my physical body. And so I would engage in things without any feeling because it didn't mean anything to me. And I probably did that as a defense mechanism so that I couldn't get my feelings hurt. You know, so it's like I would sleep with a guy who might not be physically attracted to me, but that was fine because I wanted to sleep with him anyway. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, so, it sounds like it goes back to, like, the elementary school. You would be like, I don't care.
Yeah. I definitely was like, I don't care. My relationships with men always came from a place of comfort, more, you know, I played basketball, so it was a lot of that, like, that type of interaction. So it was like, I was the girl that they hung out with and they enjoyed her company, but they wouldn't necessarily make me their girlfriend. And I told myself I was okay with that.
So you said you approached the book from what you learned. Mm-hmm. And what have you learned?
I learned that I went through a lot of stuff that I didn't realize because I repressed a lot of it. And I also realized that my experience, where I thought that I was so isolated, I thought that it was just me, I was the only person going through these things. That isolation, part of it was, like, you know, geographical, like where I live, but also it was because I just didn't even know how to relate to the world outside of myself. And so now I'm in entertainment business and all I do is relate with people. I stand on a stage and I interact and I connect with people I've never met before. So I learned that I could present myself in a way that is comfortable to me versus trying to meet up to the expectations of other people who I'll probably never ever see again.
Have you started dating differently since learning this about yourself?
Well, I tried to date like a regular girl earlier this year. With feelings. It took a lot out of me. I dated two different guys to try to date them with, like, no sexual overtones, like, no, like, yo, what's up, what's good? Because I really have to rethink how I approach men. And I've been doing that, but I approached them like the homie. I approached them like, yo, you... let's kick it, let's chill, let's have sex, you know? And so I have to be, like, you know, more of a temptress. I tried. But I ended up picking two duds. And I was like, why did I do? I went through all of this. I went through the whole 3-month mark and all that stuff. And y'all was straight up duds. Like, I could have got all of my line of questioning out earlier, but I was trying to be a chick.
What were they duds? How were they duds?
Well, they were both alcoholics.
Ugh.
I know, right? And then you don't even realize that until, like, date 4. You're like, oh, you just drink like that a lot. They were somewhat accomplished in their careers, but emotionally they were very, very damaged. I mean, these are men who are like, you know, in their 40s, because I'm 38. So like, it's like, you know, 25 years plus of drinking like a fish every weekend. And yeah, it catches up with you.
Did you approach them? They didn't approach you?
No, one I met online and the other approached me. Because normally when I go out with a guy, it's like, he'll approach me or I'll see him, or maybe I'll do online dating. But like first date, I'm like, so what do you want? What are you looking for? This is what I have. I'm not here that much. I travel a lot. This is what I'm willing to offer. You want it or not? And so sometimes that works out for me. And then this last time, people were like, well, you just need a date like a regular girl. And I was like, I'll try. And then I got two duds. And she was like, see, I fucking told you.
Do what works for you, which I feel like is the lesson.
Also, I feel like if you date like a regular girl, two dates is a drop in the bucket. Like, you literally need hundreds of dates before you find a decent.
Yeah, well, I mean, now from that experience, I'm definitely dating younger. I'm not dating anybody older than me. So that's a wrap.
Ooh.
What's the age range now?
Well, I'm turning 39 this month, so I'm going to say
birthday.
My age range. Thank you. My age range. Yes, that's right. My age range, I would say, is probably 32 to 36.
Oh, younger than you, literally. Not even just up to your age.
No.
You're very open about your age, and you said your full weight on the microphone.
Yes.
This is rare.
I would not do that.
A lot of women do not do that.
Well, you know, I've always shared my age, and I used to ask people their age until they told me you should stop asking people their age. And I say my age because I want to give people a point of reference about my experience and where I've been through in life. And so I don't want anybody to look at me and like, oh, you've gotten, you know, not that they say this, but it's like, oh, you've done so much in comedy so fast. And it's like, I started comedy at 29 and it's almost 10 years now that I've been doing it. So I want to give you a range of like, time frame. And I don't think age is anything to be afraid of. I mean, I love my age. I wouldn't change it, because when I was younger, I didn't have as much control and respect for myself than I do now.
I'll say my age, but saying your weight feels very brave.
It feels like a lot.
Like, how are you able to, I don't know. And it's weird, because it's like, I don't want to, shame is not the right word, but I'm just like,
can we keep some secrets?
Some things I'm like, this is like,
we in this era, we got to like, tell, that, people will tell you everything.
I'm not the that bold. Even my driver's license don't have my real weight.
Oh, gosh. I actually got to renew mine, so yeah, I'm going to make sure I have mine on there.
My driver's license doesn't have my real height, because I feel like my real height is insane. I'm too short.
Oh, my gosh. You got to speak your truth.
I know.
I say my weight because whenever I tell people my weight, they don't think that I weigh that much. So that's also the disconnect. It's like, when we think of someone's weight, we think of this just random number that may sound like a lot, but may not look like it's a lot on that person's frame. And so I say my weight because I want people to realize that I still technically, if you're looking at like the BMI chart, like I'm technically obese by the BMI standards. But if you look at me, you'd be like, no, you're not fat at all. So I say my weight because it's like a point of reference of being like, okay, if you didn't know me, if you didn't see, if you didn't know how tall I was and you just heard a woman who was 238 pounds, you're like, oh, she's fat as shit. But that's what we tend to do, is like, we hear a number and we just like, you know, shrivel up at it like, oh my gosh, it's a lot of weight. But you don't understand, everybody carries weight differently.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on like the, because I think it's really good, but just like, the fat positive movement and people and women especially who are like fat or live in larger bodies and being like, I'm sexy and because I feel like I did not have that growing up. Mm-hmm. So when I like looked at a body like mine, it was never an object of desire.
Yeah.
Which totally informed the way that I looked at myself.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, like someone like Lizzo being out in the mm-hmm. world and being like, yes, I'm gonna show, like, I'm putting nude photos up on my Instagram and be like, I am the shit.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't know how much I needed to see that and to see someone like owning a body that looked like mine and being like, yes, I'm hot. Like,
you know what?
What are your thoughts on that?
I was gonna say, what influenced me so much was Lena Dunham in Girls, because she was naked all the time.
All the time.
I didn't realize how much I needed to see that. Because when I first saw it, I was like, oh no, you can't be naked. Like, that was my first thought.
Where's your shame?
Exactly. Yeah, where's like, your shame? You don't have a perfect body. And then I was like, and then the more I watched it, the more I was like, literally grateful that she did it, because I was just like, I think what you're doing is super important. It made me love my body more. And I, part of me wish I had seen a black woman that whose body looked like that on camera. Mm-hmm. Because I was just like, whoa, like, this is important.
This
like
is important.
Clearly
yeah.
there's the narrative that I have been sold that this body is not worthy of being seen.
Only
and it was
one,
like,
yeah, oof, only one
it was
type.
Important. Yeah. Yeah. What do you think, Chloe?
I mean, even I remember when watching Living Single, and I remember when Khadijah James, played by Queen Latifah, like when she first started wearing leggings, I was like, oh my, she got on leggings.
Yeah.
Because it was always a box blazer and a slack with a crease in it. But in like, you know, like season 3-4, maybe in her real life, she like lost a couple pounds or maybe got more comfortable with her own body. But it was like more fitted shirts and like fitted pants. And I was like, oh my gosh, she has a body like mine. Because, you know, that's the shape that I had. And I think it is very empowering for young girls to see bodies that look like theirs. And we just have to be honest with ourselves. We're not having a real conversation, which is the average American woman is a size 16, 18.
Yeah.
Yes.
It used to be 14. It used to be 12, 14, but now it's 16, 18. So when you're telling big women that they need to lose weight, it's like, no, this is the average range of the woman's body in this country. The women who are less than that, they are the abnormality. They're not the norm. And we had to stop convincing ourselves that that's the norm. Like, I'll never be a size 8. I don't even think it's physically possible for me to be a size 8. So if you're telling me to be a size 8 with no regard to my genetics and my shape or my eating habits or, you know, what foods I process well or don't process well, that's just like giving me it's like selling me a crack dream, you know, a pipe dream.
The most fucked up thing about it is when you learn that all of this self-hatred, the driving force of it is just capitalism. It's just for you to buy stuff
because of course.
So you feel shitty about yourself so that you buy stuff.
But also so that you fit into this standard that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Right? It's like this false standard of, well, you have to look this way to be healthy. You have to. And that's the thing that bothers me, because it's all encroached under this idea of health, right?
Yes.
You have to look this way to be healthy. You have to look this way to be desirable. And it's all like lies to remove people from their individuality and their like own.
One of the things that
thing itself
made me feel
and, like,
the most...
you have to think like you Lizzo has to be in shape. She's dancing every night.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But of course, the other thing is like her, you know, we don't know what her calorie intake is. So that's like the other thing is like, just because you eat a lot doesn't mean that you're not healthy if you're having physical engagement on a regular basis.
I mean, the other end of that spectrum, though, that I learned about and felt so bad about was the people with eating disorders, like the skinny women in your life that you know, and then you get to know them a little more and you're like, oh no, you have an eating disorder and you have a horrible body image. So it's not good on either spectrum.
Well, it's just like, I feel like everyone's relationship with food and their bodies are so complex because we've been fed this lie that, like I said, like it just needs to be one way. So whether you're like, I mean, because also overeating is like an eating disorder. Like I remember I like used to go to Overeaters Anonymous when I like lived in New York. Because you're just like, oh, I am like a sugar. It would be like, I'm a sugar addict. Hi, I'm Lauren. I'm a sugar addict. I'm an overeater. And you're just like, oh, because this is also, and it would be people who also were like super skinny women who were bulimic. Mm-hmm. And like women like me, because we all have fucked up relationships with food that we're trying to manage and operating in a safe space that wasn't focused on like a Weight Watchers meeting of like, oh, we're having conversations, but it's all encroached of like, how can we get better to fit this idea? It's just like, how can I become a better person? How can I manage all these things? Which I'm so happy.
It's like, how can you, it's not even like how you can necessarily feel better. I think our conversation here in this country is like, how can I look better? We always talk about how we want to look. Mm-hmm. We don't really talk about how we want to feel.
What's your relationship with Instagram?
I do think that people use social media and it's doing a great job in disputing the things that we're fed on television and film about the woman's body. And so, like you said, just having to see another option, just being able to see a woman who looks full figured and curvy and is gorgeous that we don't see. Like, I don't know of any full figured black women on television right now like that. I can't name
them.
That
get naked? or
definitely don't. I mean, none that get naked.
No. I'm thinking. I'm trying to think.
But even in network television, there aren't any. You had Mike and Molly. You know, she was a full figure white woman. You have the woman in This Is Us, the full figure white woman.
But is that show that Rhett is on? Is this the fact that I'm just like scrounging?
I'm scrounging.
Yeah. She. What is it?
Good Girls.
Good Girls.
And Niecy Nash. She's on TV.
Niecy. Yeah, she's on Claws.
She's on Claws. But the fact that we have to like.
We really had to struggle.
Really struggle, is the problem.
Yeah. I'm like,
Chloe, what's next for you?
So I'm going on this book tour. I'm really excited about that. I actually have a comedy album that I'm dropping.
Yay! It's, what's the title?
Give us the deets.
The title is Big Dick Energy.
Yes!
I'm doing that independently. So that'll be out. And then the book comes out January 7th. And then I'll be on the road doing a book tour. And I'm really excited and happy that I was able to complete this book. It's beyond anything I ever imagined. I think there's a lot of information I put in it that can help, you know, awaken people to their relationship with food and diet that we don't talk about, you know. So like, you know, for example, I always use it as an example, but like Ronald Reagan is the reason why we have fat kids in America. When he was president, he cut the school lunch budget by $1.46 billion. And when he did that, he kind of rolled back all the restrictions that he had on the quality of the food. And since people wanted to make money off of the food, instead of a burger being like 80% beef, it ended up being like 50% beef. And they filled it with tofu, soy, and other fillers. Mm-hmm. And then you started to see kids' weight go up. And so it's a different type of mentality that we have because, like you said, it is all capitalism. And I think more people are starting to care about what they're eating and ingesting because you were starting to see the medical ramifications of these things that happen. And then also within the Black and brown community, lower income communities, like it's proven that your diet can affect your mental ability. So it's like,
absolutely,
you know, your learning ability, if you want to get into, you know, attention deficit situations, like that could be connected to like sugar intake, all these other things that drive up your body and gets a young kid excited. And it's hard to break that cycle because you can tell the kid to sit down and shut up. But if you're going to give him a bag of hot Cheetos at 9 a.m., you're just going to repeat the same cycle all over again.
Well, Chloe, it's been an absolute delight talking to you. I can't wait for your book
and for your
album now.
Yes.
We like to end every podcast episode by asking our guest, what is your secret?
My secret is trusting myself. I have to trust myself. And that became a necessity because, you know, when you're bullied as a kid and I was very naive because, like I said, I was the youngest person in my class. So I believed a lot of things. You know, I got a lot of tricks played on me and, you know, I was very, very gullible and naive. And then after a certain point, I had to just tell myself, I have to stop trusting people. Not like that, but it's like I cannot trust them to have my best interests at heart. And so I trust myself. And I think I trust myself almost to a fault because I'm so self-reliant that I don't rely on a lot of people for things. And so I do trust myself to make the right decisions, especially when it comes to my career. But I also need to get to the point where I allow people to come in a little bit more. But I would say trust yourself. Trusting myself has led me in the right direction 99.9% of the time.
And where can we find information? Where's your website or your social? So we want to get Fuck Your Diet or the Big Dick Energy album, where can we get it?
Yes, you can go to ChloeHilliard.com. That's ChloeHilliard.com. And on there, you can click on F Your Diet book, and it takes you to a whole other mini site. And on both sites, you can see all of my upcoming tour dates and then links to my album, which you can buy on all of the streaming platforms.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Chloe.
Thank you
for having me.
So, Sharla, Chloe just left the studio, and I have, like, so many thoughts.
I have thoughts, too, but I think my most prominent thought is that I feel like I've come such a long way as far as body love and body positivity and self-love, and I'm, like, super grateful. I'm feeling very happy.
I feel like I am definitely, like, still in process, but I've made leaps and bounds, you know, and it's just really inspiring for me to see like just women like Chloe, who are just owning up to their experiences and their relationships with their bodies and how the way you see yourself impacts every other relationship in your life. Like, you know, but that has been such a process for me to just see women that are just like on the journey and accept themselves and to accept myself as I am in this body now.
Yeah.
And not like a projection of, you know,
I'll love myself when.
Because I used to do that for so long of being like, well, let me try this like new like fat diet or do this like new thing. And then I'm going to like love myself and I'll be able to like date and do all of these things when I get here. And it's just like what's real is now.
It's right now.
And I have to be comfortable in this body that I'm in, but in being comfortable in this body that I'm in, I have to undo everything that I've let everyone else tell me about my body.
I think acceptance is the word of the week for me. But I do like what you just said about undoing, because that is the beginning of acceptance. Because in order to undo, you have to recognize what has been done. So you have to... And you have to get to that place of acceptance before you can get to that place of self-love, because otherwise you won't get there. But Chloe, to me, came across as someone who is just fully accepted herself. And you can tell that she has a sense of self-love that emanates from her. Like, I genuinely cannot wait to read her book. Like,
me too.
I really am very excited.
When you accept your body and who you are, that's power.
Yeah.
That's when, like, that light shines. When you're just like, I can, like, look at myself and I can feel good. And specifically saying, like, I can feel good about my body. Because it's like I always grew up thinking or knowing or being told that I was smart, but I wasn't pretty.
Yes.
And I wasn't pretty because I was fat. So I'm just now learning to get to that place.
And ooh, what a journey it's been, girl.
What a journey it's been. But I'm here now and it feels really good. I'm like, the world ain't ready. The world is not ready for me once I'm fully confident.
I really will rule this place.
Yes.
I truly will. Like, watch out.
Watch out.
Watch out. Don't let me get confident.
Don't. I mean, but it's happening. I feel it happening. Because I'm like, the world isn't ready, but I'm so fucking ready I'm so ready.
I'm getting very close. I'm feeling really good. I'm feeling very blessed. Because I did do this, like, self-acceptance kind of work, like, last, you know, when I was talking about my Equinox story. It started there. I could tell from the moment that happened that I was like, sick of this. I'm sick of this. Like, what is this getting me? This like self-hatred, this dreading looking at my body coming into the gym. It's like, if I'm gonna come to the gym, it has to be an enjoyable experience, because it's not intrinsically enjoyable. Like, it's work. So I have to enjoy it, because I feel like what I'm going to get out of it is not just positive, but beneficial, you know? So it's just like changing that mindset it started everything. It changed everything. And I feel like I'm in a good place. I like it. I like myself. Yeah.
Just keep going.
Keep doing it.
Keep doing it.
We haven't really asked you guys to share this podcast before, but I'm going to go ahead and ask you to share, post this. If you really like this episode, share it with your friends, send it to people. Talk about it. Follow us online. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. Follow us online, and also just look at yourself in the mirror, naked if you want to or not, and just be like, tell yourself, this is the thing that I've started doing, of just telling myself what I love about myself and my body while like looking in the mirror. And it's been really impactful. So I think if you're struggling, just like look in the mirror and just tell yourself one thing that you love about yourself, and just like, on the days that one thing grows into several, share all those things with yourself too. That's my advice.
Do what Lauren says. All right. Bye,
guys. Thanks, guys. Bye.
We are your hosts, Sharla Lauriston
and Lauren Domino.
The Secret Lives of Black Women is a production of Stitcher.
Our producer is Stephanie Kariuki.
Our editor is Gianna Palmer.
The show is recorded and mixed by Andy Christens.
Special thanks to our Chief Content Officer, Chris Bannon, and to Brendan Burns, who made our theme music.
Make sure you follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the SLBW. See you later.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.